Welcome to the Mentoris Project podcast, covering mentorship, books, and more. In this podcast, we interview the authors of a new series of books where we meet the men and women who mentored Western civilization. This is Dr. Roseanne Welch. For more information, visit mentorisproject.org. Our guest today is Eric Martin, author of Saving the Republic, a novel based on the life of Marcus Cicero, a man considered one of the greatest orators of the Roman Republic, whose letters have continued to be discussed and debated from the Renaissance through the Enlightenment to today. Quite an accomplishment for one man and one mind. So tell me, Eric, why does Cicero matter to us today?
I think Cicero matters for a lot of reasons. Like, we actually still have a lot of his legal arguments that are kind of used in modern law. A lot of Roman law is modern law. But I think in our political environment, Cicero really stands out. At the time that he was prominent in Roman politics, the Republic was in a tumultuous period. Things were changing. There was no constitution in Rome, so it was pretty much governed with political norms. And what Cicero fought to do was to keep those norms in place while people were starting to break those and push for more power, which ultimately led to the rise of the empire.
Well, that's always so fascinating, just thinking about how much we mirror what happened back then.
Yeah, it's not so different.
Is there any particular law that you're thinking about that he was very involved with, focusing on, or sort of keeping?
Well, not so much a particular law pops to mind, but within the book I write about one of the arguments he made, qui bono. Actually, my Latin's terrible, so I'm not sure.
That's right, I think. Qui bono.
But essentially, it's, you know, who benefited. Looking at a crime and finding motive in who benefited, not who appears guilty because so-and-so says it, because you can manipulate witnesses, and such was the case back then. But looking back at, like, well, who ultimately would benefit off this crime, you can see who the likely culprit is.
And, of course, anyone who watches any Criminal Minds or that sort of program, that's always a what's motive.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and we're pretty fortunate because, you know, we have some of his speeches that have survived from antiquity, so we can, like, read his actual argument from then. It's pretty fascinating.
I love that idea of being able to hear what he thought through the words that have survived.
Yeah, I was pretty fortunate with him as a subject with that.
That's so cool. I don't know if off the top of your head you could think of a particular quote or something that he said that really stuck in your head.
I guess I just reiterated that one so much, the qui bono, like, that is the one that sticks in my head. In reading that whole court oration, he repeated it over and over again, and it reminded me very much of, like, some of these modern super trials with Johnny Cochran, as he repeated over and over again, if the glove does not fit, you must acquit. And, you know, Cicero was such a talented speaker, and I don't know that it was necessarily his oratory voice, but he was so strategic, so smart, and repeating the same thing over and over again, qui bono, qui bono, anybody in the courtroom, it changed their mind. They had to start looking at that.
I love that. And I love the idea that you're right. We don't, sadly, have a recording, so we have no idea the power of the voice, but the arguments we can see and recognize to this day.
Yeah.
He's amazing. I love Cicero. So what did you learn about his childhood, and how do you think his childhood influenced his mind and his ideas later in life?
I don't know specifically if it did, but I can extrapolate out. He actually was born quite sickly, and through much of his early life he was sick. And had he not actually been born into the structure of the Roman Empire, it's likely he probably would have perished. And I don't know that that was a cognizant thing, that he really realized, okay, I have this to thank for my life. But on some level, I think that probably affected things, because he was a stalwart defender of the Republic and respected, despite not being patrician born, he respected the gifts that it gave him. And so I think his early life, like, that definitely affected things. And he also was intelligent from a very young age. He was highly educated. His parents moved to Rome so he would be better educated.
Ah, so the parents were deeply involved in giving him the opportunity he needed.
Yeah.
Cool. Were you able to find any research about the parents at all? Anything he wrote about them or any ideas of who they might have been?
You know, very little. I mean, stuff in letters, but nothing too direct.
It's always amazing how much we've lost in the world because of not having access to all that information.
Oh, yeah, and he has so much that survived. It just tells you how much has been lost of everyone else.
True, because they communicated completely through letters.
Yeah.
What relationships in life do you think really fueled him forward? If they were parents, if they were children, if they were friends among his or professors of his?
I think it was friends, contemporaries. I don't want to lionize him too much because he was a politician. So by his nature, he was playing a game. Cicero was known for being a letter writer and to keep correspondence up with a great number of people, and he drew from that. One friendship of his was with the past. He spent a great deal of his life translating Greek philosophy, and that was one of the things he really offered to future generations, was bringing that into Latin and allowing other people to learn of Stoicism and the such. And I think that was really one of his great relationships, was with just the literature of the past.
That's a fascinating idea, because we learn so much from the past, but some people completely ignore it as well. So here's a guy who recognized that we're going to build on what happened before us and try to get stronger and better and smarter.
Yeah, which I think his great historical knowledge is why he was able to see some of the dangers of what was going on and the changes in the political culture and how it was leading back toward Rome having a king, which is what the Republic was all built to prevent.
To avoid, exactly. So that leads me right into the idea that that was probably the major issue of his day, or what other issues did he involve himself with?
There were a number. I think corruption was a big one. And again, you know, he was a politician, so on some level, he's using the corruption of other people to help rise in the ranks. So I don't know if it was altruistic, but he certainly uncovered a lot of corruption. One of the major points in his career was the Catiline conspiracy, where his life was threatened. And this is where he was kind of placed in an interesting position, where he could break some political norms and execute Catiline without trial, because there really wasn't the proper evidence to convict this person. But if he allowed it to go, because he was a consul at the time, and if he allowed this conspiracy to murder him to pass without punishment, well, then it's going to lead to assassinations down the line. So he made a calculation to execute Catiline, and was it the right choice? I don't know. He paid a huge toll at the time, and he never totally recovered politically, but he was still a player up until his death.
Okay, so who were his competitors? Who was fighting against him to get his place in the world?
Well, certainly Julius Caesar.
Dude, we've never heard of him.
Yes, yeah. Ultimately, they were contemporaries. I believe Caesar was a little younger, but Cicero was a main competitor of his, especially when Caesar was pushing for power. Cicero aligned himself with the other faction, and they were at direct odds. But all along the way, he had competitors for position as he climbed the ranks, because, again, he was not patrician-born. So he had like a slightly harder time rising up to consul, but he made his path up there the first availability. Like, as I said, it was in his year. So the first year he would be qualified for quaestor, he was able to attain that position. And that was actually his greatest political achievement in his mind.
Because once he got on the ladder, then he could keep moving up.
Yeah, yeah. And to be able to do that when he was eligible every time, that takes a considerable amount of work and dealing and politicking.
Well, he was an ultimate politician, that's true. So what was your impression of him before you started to research him?
You know, I guess I just had general knowledge of an orator and a political leader. I knew he was contemporary of Caesar, but, you know, I just kind of had the general knowledge. What changed in really getting into it was what an intellectual he was. And as much as he was a political animal, he very much was a student, and like he was his entire life. Like, learning meant a lot to him, and his intellectuality is what like really paved the way for him.
That's a lesson for everybody in any era. What do you think was the most interesting piece of research you came upon as you were looking into his life? Something you didn't know, or you thought, oh, this is really cool, I have to make sure I include this.
The Catiline conspiracy was the most interesting thing, just getting into that and the political intrigue of it all. And seeing, like, I think it's pretty easy for us to look at modern politics and you know, you watch a movie and think, oh, that's ridiculous. So, you know, there's a assassination attempt. That just doesn't happen. And, well, you know, you look all the way through history and you see what he went through and like, no, this stuff does happen. It's often hidden. And in his day, it was hidden quite often. But he was able to sniff out this conspiracy before it ever happened and call it to the light of day. I also really enjoyed reading his court speeches. It really is, it's a time machine. Mm. You can go in and see what this man actually said and wrote, and like these political arguments that were so well thought out and written out in a way that, yeah, you could see, you could get a sense of the man.
Oh, that's what writing does for people. They always say, I think John Quincy Adams said, if you want to be remembered 100 years from now, you either plant a tree or write a book. Mm-hmm. And that's how people will know who you were and what you thought. So it's only by luck. How is it that we still have Cicero's writings in his work when so much has been lost?
You know, I don't know, because I'm certain there have been other figures from Roman past that were just as prominent, but for whatever reason, his work has survived. I have to think a lot of that is all the translations he did. The Greek translations, you know, they wasn't even his own work, but I think it must have led to a lot of his other work surviving, just kind of getting bundled together, maybe. I don't know. It's pretty interesting that he has survived when there were so many others. I think just the writing in general, though, because he was so prolific and kept writing. It's like the same with Marcus Aurelius. Having so much written, he just stands up above the others.
I love that. It's a reminder to everyone that we should be writing more long-term letters and really giving the truth of what we believe and whatnot, because that is what's going to stand up when we're gone. Okay, so what do you think it was in your background that drew you to writing about him, that gave you a sense of understanding him?
I think the first thing that drew me was I've been a political junkie since I was a kid. My mom, she loves to read, and she would try to get me to read novels, but I just wasn't that interested. Weird that I'm a storyteller, but I wasn't that interested in those stories. But I loved reading the newspaper. She, like, when I was like five, she got me a newspaper subscription because I just loved to read about the current events, and I loved reading history. And the way he wove through all of that was really fascinating. And then as I got deeper into him, what really inspired me was that his early years and how he was not of great health and how that changed him. I had a lot of issues with asthma when I was really young, and I would be quite sick quite often. And I could get a sense of like what his life was like and how I think it maybe pushed him a little inward and made him a little more intellectual because of that. And, you know, I definitely feel some of that within myself.
That's beautiful. Wow. Being that this is a work of fiction based on the real research that you did, what's the scene that you found most interesting to write or that you're very proud of because it brings out something true about the character?
I like the stuff with him as a child. I enjoy writing about him going through the streets and just kind of getting a sense of what it must have felt like just walking around. The smoke in the air from the ovens and the wood-burning stoves. And early on, there's a scene with a little bit of levity where people, they had chamber pots because obviously they did not have modern
no indoor
modern plumbing. And what people would actually do is in the morning, you'd have to be careful because people would open up their window and toss it out into the street. It's just so visceral and human and... So I wrote in a scene where he is going through on like one of his first days of school, and he is laden with somebody's chamber pot.
It must have happened.
Yeah.
To
no. It was known to happen. I mean, in some places in the world, it still happens, I think.
But that also sounds like it's the kind of thing that gives people the true feeling of the place.
Yeah.
In a period.
Well, something that awful that happens, you know, you can let it sour you on things or you can let it make you stronger. And with Cicero, you know, he did love Rome and it wasn't something that soured him on it. A lot of that's invented in my mind, but it's one of the fun things that could happen. It's horrible at the moment, but then when you tell people later on, it can be a funny story.
True, especially, of course, in our world where that just seems ridiculous and yet what else would you do? Did you find any themes or a couple of themes that run through his life that you sort of picked on and built across the novel?
I think honor is a big one. Standing up for one's beliefs, especially when it's not convenient. And there were many periods, many moments in his life where he stood up for things and he benefited from it politically. He was able to use it in a way for him to climb the ladder and gain political points. And then it was later in his life when he reached consul, which was his whole political goal. He was consul of Rome, and it ended up working out the opposite. He had to take his honor, and it worked against him. And that's kind of just one of the weird things about life, that can happen. You benefit from it sometimes, and other times you don't. But if you carry that honor with you, that's the important thing. And he did throughout his life.
It defines who you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing. So how did it work against him?
Well, his whole consulship was tarnished. I mean, he never recovered from that politically. Hmm. It cost him heavily. He came back and had some public life, but there was a time where he, left Rome and was disgraced.
That's so sad. Okay, so I like to ask the last couple of questions focusing on the whole Mentors Project idea. Who would you say were Cicero's mentors, and or who did he mentor?
In the book, I have Sulla as one of his main mentors. I don't know that Sulla totally was his mentor. There was a little bit of invention there, but they certainly crossed paths. Cicero learned what to do and what not to do from him. Then later in his life, he was older than Julius Caesar, and they were friends, and he mentored him.
It's an amazing relationship to think about, just these two men who had no idea how they would go down in history together.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, then, of course, my favorite last question is, who are your mentors in life?
I have a number of mentors. From grad school, I have an MFA in screenwriting, and I have two great mentors that came directly from that. Chris Kluse, amazing comedy writer, and Cheryl Anderson, she's a great drama writer, and I've been lucky to have been mentored professionally by them, and they're both just great friends now. And I get to look at how they conduct themselves professionally and also have their great wisdom in helping me craft my own work. And it's been so meaningful to me that, I work hard to offer the same thing to young writers coming in now as well.
Well, that's a beautiful sentiment.
Yeah, yeah. And then in my personal life, I've just had the great honor of having wonderful people around me. A woman that took my mom and I in when I was 6 months old, Judy Pengree. She passed away a few years ago, but she's certainly my greatest mentor in life. She just had such zeal and kindness in her, and I think about how she lived her life and try to offer that same kindness to people.
And that's the job of and the influence of mentors in our world.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Mentors Podcast, sponsored by the Barbera Foundation, whose mission is to promote positive change by inspiring others to engage in their community. Your host has been Dr. Roseanne Welch. Our music was composed by Patrick Abate, technical direction by Douglas E. Welch, and Kathleen Childress designed our website. For more information and to read more about the great mentors in history, visit mentorsproject.org and join us for our next conversation.